Okay, let's dive in. You sent over this article about the archaeology of mega events, specifically the Crystal Palace from the 1851 Great Exhibition in London. And it really got me thinking. I mean, we all know that iconic image, right? The glass and iron.
Of course.
But how much of its story is actually like buried underground?
That's what I think is so fascinating about this article. It's like archaeology of the recent past, you know? We're so used to thinking about digging up ancient ruins and things. But what about these things that were designed to be temporary? How do you even find the traces of something that was meant to just vanish?
It's like trying to find a ghost's footprint. But even a fleeting event, I guess, can leave some kind of mark.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the article calls it relative impermanence.
That's a great term, I mean, think about it. Even if a physical structure is gone, it might have changed how a space was used.
Or like even the whole layout of a city. The article uses the example of like Paris's boulevards.
Oh, interesting.
After the revolutions, they were redesigned to make it harder to put up barricades.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Huh.
So the event's over, but the impact lingers on.
So those wide streets are like a scar from past unrest.
In a way, yeah.
Wow, that makes the Crystal Palace even more interesting. Everyone always pictures that like shining glass and iron. But the article mentions concrete and timber too. I never thought of those materials as being part of like such a modern building.
And that's where it gets really fascinating. The Crystal Palace, this symbol of industrial progress, was actually built with materials and processes that weren't modern at all. So, like, take the concrete they used for the footings, it was all hand mixed, using gravel from the site itself.
So this building celebrating machines was built with techniques more like ancient Roman construction. Is that ironic or just practical?
I think it's kind of both, maybe. But it definitely challenges those assumptions we have about like progress always being about new technology. Maybe it's just as much about adapting older techniques to new situations.
And then there's what happened to those concrete footings during World War II. Almost poetic, really.
During the Blitz, the site was basically used as a quarry. They dug up those footings, mixed them with rubble from bombed buildings, shipped it all off to East Anglia.
To build airfields for American bombers.
Exactly.
That's a crazy twist. The Crystal Palace, meant for peace and industry, becomes part of the war machine.
It's true. History is full of these unexpected connections, you know? It's like weaving together all these seemingly unrelated
It
events.
makes you wonder what traces our own mega events will leave for like future archaeologists.
It really does.
Okay, now on to the timber. The article says they used a mind-boggling amount of it.
It's true.
You'd think with all that iron and glass, they wouldn't need that much wood.
But there was a good reason for it, Paxton. The architect, he knew that metal would expand and contract too much in the sun. You can just imagine all that glass shattering.
That'd be bad.
It would have been a disaster. So wood, in a way, was actually the more practical and even ingenious choice.
So even in this modern structure, they had to rely on this like ancient material?
They did.
Wow, that makes the construction even more impressive,
That was
honestly.
a massive undertaking. The article describes the scene from the Illustrated London News. Hundreds of workers raising these gigantic wooden ribs for the transept. Each one weighed 8 tons.
That's incredible.
It's almost like watching them build Stonehenge, but right alongside those cutting-edge exhibits they had inside the palace.
Wow, that mixing of old and new is just fascinating. It makes you realize the Crystal Palace wasn't just about machines. It was a product of human ingenuity and labor.
Precisely. And that becomes even more obvious when you look at the glass.
Each pane was mouth-blown right.
It was.
Hundreds of thousands of panes, all made by hand.
It's astounding, isn't it?
That must have been such grueling work.
It makes you think about the working conditions, too. Imagine the lung power needed. Was it dangerous? The article doesn't really go into that aspect of it, but it certainly adds another layer to the story, I think.
So even in this age of machines, human skill was still essential.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just about the progress, but about the people who made it happen.
And when we think about the iron, we find more of these really intriguing remnants. We have the base plates at Sydenham, of course.
Where the palace was relocated after the Great Exhibition.
But then there's also that lone column standing in a Cambridgeshire fen.
The article mentions that, but just like In passing.
Right.
What's the story there?
It's a bit of a mystery, honestly.
Oh.
It seems likely it was moved there after the palace was dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe used as a marker for like changing ground levels or something.
Okay.
But it's become almost like a relic, you know?
Yeah.
Embodying the story of the Crystal Palace in this strange, isolated setting.
It's like finding a piece of a shipwreck.
Yes.
Miles inland.
Yeah.
It makes you think about how these seemingly random fragments can become so evocative.
They do. They become these touchstones to the past.
Yeah.
Sparking our curiosity. And speaking of fragments,
okay.
There's an important point the article makes about cast iron in construction.
Yeah.
It's actually quite brittle.
Oh, is it?
It is, which is why it worked well for those soaring vertical columns.
Right, strong under compression.
Exactly. But under tension, like in bridges, it can be prone to catastrophic failure.
And there were some pretty high-profile bridge collapses in the late 19th century.
You were. Like the Tay Bridge disaster.
That was awful.
It was a terrible tragedy. And it was a real shock, you know?
Yeah.
Realizing that this material that had been hailed as the future of construction
right.
could be so vulnerable.
So the Crystal Palace, with its cast iron structure, embodies that kind of arc of technological innovation in a way.
Yeah.
Like the initial excitement, the promise of a new era, and then the realization that even the most revolutionary materials have their limitations.
It's a story that repeats itself throughout history, doesn't it?
It really does.
We get so caught up in the hype of a new invention, a new material.
Right.
But eventually we're forced to confront its shortcomings.
Yeah. And maybe that's one of the most enduring lessons of the Crystal Palace.
I think so.
For all its grandeur, it was still a product of its time, embodying both the triumphs and the limitations of the Industrial Revolution.
It wasn't just a symbol of progress, but a reflection of all the complexities and contradictions of that era.
Mm.
Its story, like the iron and glass it was built from, is much more nuanced than we might imagine.
Definitely. And that brings us to Sydenham.
Ugh.
The original Crystal Palace was meant to be temporary, but the public loved it.
It did.
It feels like there was real momentum to like make it permanent somehow.
And that's exactly what happened. The Crystal Palace was reborn at Sydenham on an even grander scale, 5 times larger than the original Edelbear.
Wow.
It became a destination in its own right, a place for exhibitions, entertainment, education, even leisure.
It wasn't just a building, but a whole complex, right?
Sure.
Gardens, fountains, dinosaur statues.
A true Victorian spectacle. And the article makes this interesting point.
Okay.
All those events that were held at Sydenham over decades, they sometimes overshadowed the original Great Exhibition.
Oh, interesting.
In the public's memory, it became less about that one specific event and more about like the idea of the Crystal Palace itself.
The palace is like a symbol.
Exactly.
A gathering place.
Yeah.
And it hosted everything.
It did.
Concerts, political rallies, even cat shows.
I know, right?
I read they had a massive Festival of Empire there in 1911.
Yeah.
A miniature railway.
Uh-huh.
Replicas of parliament buildings from across the empire.
It was quite the spectacle.
It must have been quite a sight.
It was very deliberate, too, you know?
Yeah.
Designed to really showcase the reach and power of the British Empire.
Right.
Exhibits from all the colonies. A 15,000-person historical pageant.
Wow.
They really went all out.
Was it purely celebratory, though?
That's a good question.
Or was there a political message behind it, too?
Well,
like, was it meant to reinforce British dominance?
Yeah.
At a time when, you know, other empires were rising.
It's worth noting that even during this grand celebration, the Crystal Palace Company actually filed for bankruptcy.
Oh, wow.
So beneath all that imperial pomp and grandeur, you know, there were financial troubles brewing.
So even the Crystal Palace, for all its splendor, wasn't immune to economic realities.
It wasn't.
Maybe it speaks to the changing times, you know?
Right.
Like the end of the Victorian era and the rise of new global powers.
Perhaps. But even in decline,
the
palace still held a certain magic, I think. There was this growing nostalgia for the Victorian age, you know?
Yeah.
A sense that it represented this simpler, more optimistic time.
Right.
And the Crystal Palace, with all its grandeur and history, it really embodied that nostalgia.
And then in 1936.
Yes.
The fire.
The fire.
It's almost too perfect an ending, isn't it?
It is, in a way.
Dramatic, widely witnessed.
Captured on newsreel.
Yeah, like something out of a movie.
It must have been a devastating sight.
Yeah.
And yet, even in its destruction, the story continues.
Right.
The ruins became this dumping ground for Blitz rubble.
Wow.
A site for recycling wartime materials.
It's just layers of history upon layers.
It really is.
There were even rumors
Oh, yeah.
that some of the melted iron was sold to Krupp.
Wow.
The German arms manufacturer.
That's quite a twist.
Talk about irony.
Yeah, that adds a whole other layer.
This symbol of international cooperation and industrial might.
Right.
Entangled in the very conflicts that it was meant to transcend.
It's almost Shakespearean, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you think about how even the most ambitious human creations
yeah.
are ultimately subject to the forces of history.
Mm.
You know?
It's true.
The Crystal Palace, once this shining beacon of progress,
mm-hmm.
becomes entangled in war and destruction.
That's a sobering thought.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it also highlights the persistence of the past, doesn't it?
It does. Even though the physical structure is gone,
right.
its story continues to fascinate us.
And that's what makes this article so intriguing.
Absolutely.
It's not just about the Crystal Palace.
No.
It's about how we study and understand the past.
Exactly. Speaking of studying the past.
Yeah.
Let's go back to those materials for a minute.
Okay.
We talked about concrete and timber.
Right.
But those iconic elements, the glass and iron,
mm.
those are really what captured the Victorian imagination.
Absolutely. But even here, yeah. the story is more complex than we might think.
It is.
Take the glass, for example.
Okay.
It wasn't mass produced like today.
Right.
Each of those nearly 300,000 panes
wow.
was mouth-blown by skilled craftsmen.
That's an incredible amount of hand-blown glass.
It is.
It really highlights that human element in this seemingly industrial marvel.
Such a contrast to the way we make glass today, with huge automated factories.
Absolutely. It shows that the Crystal Palace wasn't just a product of machines, mm. but of the people who built it. Their skills, their artistry.
Yeah.
It reminds us that progress isn't always about replacing human labor,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes about finding ways for technology and craftsmanship to coexist.
Now, the iron.
Yeah.
We talked about those base plates at Sydenham and the Lone Column in the Cambridgeshire Fen.
Right.
But cast iron eventually fell out of favor as a building material, didn't it?
It did.
Why is that?
The reason is actually pretty simple. Brittleness.
Oh. Okay.
It's strong under compression. Which is why it worked so well for those soaring vertical columns.
Yeah.
But under tension, like you'd find in bridges.
Right.
It can be prone to catastrophic failure.
And there were some pretty high-profile bridge collapses in the late 19th century.
There were. It must have been a shock, you know?
Yeah.
Realizing that this material that had been seen as the future of construction
mm-hmm.
could be so vulnerable.
So in a way, the Crystal Palace, with its cast iron structure...
Yeah.
embodies that kind of arc of technological innovation.
It does.
The initial excitement,
mm-hmm.
the promise of a new era,
mm-hmm.
and then that realization that even the most revolutionary materials have their limitations.
It's a story that we see play out time and again throughout history, isn't it?
It really is.
We get caught up in the hype of a new invention, a new material,
right.
but eventually we're forced to confront its shortcomings.
And that perhaps is one of the most enduring lessons of the Crystal Palace.
I think so.
Makes you wonder what our own, like, iconic structures will teach future generations, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, the Crystal Palace was only standing for, what, like 85 years?
Right.
But its impact is still felt today.
It is. And it's not just its physical legacy.
Right.
Those scattered remnants and buried foundations.
Yeah.
But it's also its presence in our, like, collective memory.
Mm-hmm.
We still talk about it, write about it. People even dream of rebuilding it.
There have been quite a few proposals over the years to, like, reconstruct the Crystal Palace.
I have.
At Sydenham, haven't there?
Yeah, several, actually.
Yeah.
Some more realistic than others.
Right.
A few years ago, there was that one backed by a Chinese investment firm.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
To recreate the exterior of the second palace,
mm-hmm.
but with, like, a modern interior.
Right, shops and a hotel.
Exactly, exhibition space.
It was pretty controversial, wasn't it?
It was very controversial.
Some people saw it as this, like, cynical attempt to cash in on nostalgia.
Yeah.
And then others genuinely wanted to see this, like, iconic landmark brought back to life.
It's true. It really sparked a debate about how we value and interpret our architectural heritage, you know?
Right.
Is it about preserving the past exactly as it was,
mm-hmm.
or reimagining it for, like, a new era?
And in the end, that particular project fell through.
It did.
But the fact that these proposals keep, like, emerging speaks to the enduring power of the Crystal Palace, right?
It does.
Even though it's gone.
Yeah.
It hasn't been forgotten.
It's like a ghost that haunts our imagination.
Yeah.
Reminding us of this lost era of grandeur and ambition.
Right. And the article makes this really thought-provoking point.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the Crystal Palace is most potent in its absence.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, well, its physical presence is gone, right?
It is, yeah.
Reduced to just fragments and traces.
Mm-hmm.
But that absence allows us to, like, project our own meanings and interpretations onto it.
Right.
We fill the void with our own ideas, our own memories.
Our own hopes for the future.
Exactly. Mm. So it becomes a kind of blank canvas
on
which we can paint our own visions of the past.
I like that.
And maybe even the future.
Exactly. And it's in that space of imagination, of possibility, that the Crystal Palace continues to exert its power.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive into the Crystal Palace, what's the key takeaway for our listeners, you think?
That's a good question.
What can we learn from this story of a building that was both like a triumph of its time and ultimately like a victim of its own limitations?
I think the most important lesson is that even temporary events can leave lasting impacts.
Yeah.
Both physically and in our collective memory.
Right.
It reminds us to look at our surroundings with a more inquisitive eye, you know, to see the layers of history embedded in the places we inhabit.
To think about the events, both grand and mundane, that have shaped our cities, our landscapes, even our own lives.
And to consider what traces we ourselves are leaving behind
for
future generations to discover and interpret.
The Crystal Palace might be gone, but its story continues to resonate with us today.
It does.
It's a story about progress and its discontents.
Yeah.
About the enduring power of human ingenuity.
Right.
And those inevitable forces of change and decay.
It's a reminder that the past is never truly past. It continues to shape the present and the future.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to uncover its stories, to learn from its lessons, and to imagine new possibilities for the world we're building.
So the next time you find yourself walking through a park or exploring a city, or even just like looking at an old photograph.
Right.
Remember the Crystal Palace.
Remember that beneath the surface, there are layers of history waiting to be discovered.
Wow.
Stories waiting to be told.
Stories that can connect us to the past.
Absolutely.
Illuminate the present.
Yeah.
And inspire us to think differently about the future.
And that's the power of archaeology, the power of storytelling, and the enduring legacy of the Crystal Palace.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
Until next time.
Yeah.
Keep exploring.